Hey everyone, this is Sydney Shute from Victory Condition Gaming, and you're listening to the Victory Condition Gaming Podcast.
Welcome to Victory Condition Gaming. This is our top five list of 2017 RPGs. If you don't agree with our top five lists, then, you know, that's okay. You'll enjoy this. If you do like this kind of content, feel free to subscribe. With me tonight, my two co-hosts, we have my buddy Kent Blue from Role to Play Podcasts.
What's up, everybody?
If you're not listening to Role to Play Podcasts, you should give them a listen. He is an actual play podcast. He does some really great work, and he's had some really entertaining sessions on his podcast. So I have a link to Kent's podcast in the description, so feel free to click on that. Also joining us tonight is Alan Barr from Gallant Knight Games.
Hey, everyone.
Alan is putting out some great RPGs himself. Guys, before we start, do you want to do you have any opening remarks? My RPGs tend, you'll see, there's kind of like a little bit of a theme with my RPGs for 2017.
Yeah, mine's going to trend pretty indie, I think. So okay. There are some bigger titles on there, one pretty big title at least. But yeah, I like smaller, more indie games, roguelike games. So that's where my list is going to trend towards. But they're not all small and roguelike. So,
Alan, you're all over the board, aren't you?
Yeah.
It's all right. It's all right. Yeah. No, it's good. It's all good. All right. Who would like to start out with their number five?
I'll go.
Okay.
So my number five is the Blue Rose RPG from Green Ronin.
Oh, that's a beautiful book. I saw that at PAX Unplugged.
So the art is stunning. It uses the Fantasy Age system, which I haven't had a ton of experience with. So I'm still out to the pasture on how I feel about the rule set. Obviously, I've only played a couple games, so I don't have a full grasp. But what I've read, I loved, and the setting is just so well defined and evocative and interesting, and it's different. It feels different, and it's a romantic fantasy RPG in the vein of the great literary romances, not a bodice ripping novels. Grandmother buys at the airport, but
or Kent buys.
Kent buys.
Yeah, Kent's got a whole library of those. I think.
I'm well acquainted with Harlequin, so.
it's romantic in the literary sense of the matter of Britain, the matter of France, the great sort of literary epics of romantic heroes. So, it's fantastic. It's something I desperately want to play more than I played, and I love it.
Nice. Awesome. Yeah, it was selling very well at PAX Unplugged.
It's a great game.
Yeah, so I looked at it. I picked it up. I didn't have a whole lot of space in my luggage for books, so there was a lot of books at PAX Unplugged that I picked up and put down, but that was definitely one of them. That one, if I had more space, I would have picked it up, definitely. Kent, you want to go next?
Yeah, I'll go next. So my number five is a small RPG, one page, from Grant Howitt, who has a whole Patreon for one page RPGs, and it is Honey Heist. So in Honey Heist, it is HoneyCon 2017, and you and your crew are about to do the biggest heist ever in history, and you're all bears. So you're nice. Going to Honey Heist, and you have two stats, and one stat is bear for doing things like bear stuff, which is like growling and climbing trees and mauling people. And then you have a criminal stat for anything you do that's not bear-ish. Honey Heist is really fun. It's real simple, one-page rules. It's such a funny game to play.
That sounds
awesome. He sells the rules on a shirt, so you can wear the shirt to cons and just sit down and play with anybody.
Does he really? Yeah.
Yep.
That is amazing.
Oh yeah.
That's genius right there.
Yeah, I mean his one-page Patreon or one-page RPG Patreon, I support it, and it's just all the games that come out are really cool on it. Just what he's doing with just one page there. So, I would highly suggest checking that out, Grant, how it's one-page RPG Patreon.
I will definitely have to check that out. Alan, have you played any of those?
I have played most of his one-page RPG.
Have you really?
Yes.
Wow, very cool. I'll have to check that out. Number five for me is a book which shouldn't surprise you. It's a Free League publishing book. It is Coriolis, The Third Horizon. This is a sci-fi book that is beautiful, and it uses the Mutineer Zero engine. I love this book. It is Arabian Nights meets Firefly. You're this like spaceship that has gone into the future. Into the Third Horizon, And evidently there's some humanity that has already gotten there before you. And so there's first, I forget what they call the first worlders. And then there's like the new arrivals. And there's that whole tension there between the two. It's a beautiful, beautiful book. It's really easy to play. I love the fact how your ship is part of the game. Like, so not only do you have player characters, but you have like this whole group, like ship that you have to maintain. And I love that aspect of the game as well. So yeah, my number five, Coriolis by Free League Publishing.
So my number four is Degenesis, The Killing Game.
That's another one that's beautiful.
It is. So Degenesis makes some of the prettiest role-playing games on the market. If you haven't looked through their stuff, you need to take a serious look through it. Just visually, it's stunning stuff the whole way through. I have all their stuff on my shelf, and it's well worth it. And this is a campaign for the Degenesis rule set, and it's just fantastic. I love it.
Nice.
It's gritty, post-apocalyptic, violent in all the right places, just almost splatter gore post-apocalypse. It's just amazing.
Yeah, that's, again, I saw that one. I picked it up. It was actually on its own table at PAX Unplugged, and I went past that table I don't know how many times, and I picked it up probably three times, and I was just like, no.
You need to fix that this year.
Yeah, I think that's going to definitely be a 2018 pickup.
It's definitely got a lot of keywords that I like, so I'm going to have to look into that one.
Exactly. Oh, it did for me. And then it was just, you just can't not pick it up when you walk past it, because it's just visually it's appealing. All right, Kent, number four. All right.
So number four, I don't have the book. I have the PDF, and it is it's a game that has zombies in it, but zombies are in any good zombie story. The zombies are the background. We're talking about Red Markets by Caleb Stokes. Red Markets it takes place in the zombie apocalypse, and you play as takers, who are people that are just trying their best to survive. The way when the zombie apocalypse happened, it split the country, kind of. So you have people to the east of the Mississippi, which are safe in a quarantine zone. You have people out to the west that are trying to earn a living to retire one day to the recession, which is the safe zone. So you're playing these takers, and your goal is to just, you do jobs. You have to negotiate price on jobs. You have to find jobs to take, and then you go out and you complete them, and you come back and you earn money and start and just keep compiling that until one day you can retire your character to the recession.
Interesting.
Yeah, and it's a big book too. It's pushing close 500 pages.
Oh my word!
Yeah, but it's such an interesting setting. It's Caleb Stokes is one of the RPPR guys, so he talks about it. You can hear a lot of live plays on there. I played a couple sessions of it. It's really cool. Just it is meaty, you know, because I'd say at first is an economic game, kind of an economic role playing game, because you're managing a lot of money and jobs and negotiating, but the zombies are in the background as just that thing that's in your way, along with other groups of takers. But it's a really, really cool setting.
That sounds cool. It sounds kind of just further from something that you would normally like, because you like a lot of rules light stuff, and this seems kind of the opposite of that, which is kind of neat.
Yep.
Sounds something that more like Alan would be into.
I have a soft spot.
I don't do zombies. I think they're
Yeah, no, I know you're not a big fan of zombies, but the whole system sounds.
Gladly let Kent have this one. I'm okay with that.
All right. Cool. Very cool. I'll have to check that one out. I like me some zombies, so I'm not like Alan. You put some zombies in front of me, I'll get into it.
You know, I watched Night of the Living Dead pretty young, and it kind of stuck, and it stuck with me throughout. Sure. So I'll always have that soft spot for zombies.
Hey, I watched Poltergeist pretty young, and it stuck with me too. I was in therapy for years.
Yeah, I watched that young too, and that scared me pretty bad. All right, so my number four is a book that was very popular. It was really well anticipated coming into 2017. It is, of course, Starfinder by Paizo. This is a little more crunchier than I like, but I really dig, as you'll probably see, I really dig sci-fi, and sometimes you just want to play alien races, and you want to play all sorts of, you know, you want to play like a normal sci-fi setting, and I really dig this book. I have not gotten a chance to play this, but I really, really like it, and I need to find a group to play this and try it out. I'm not probably a little more crunchier than I'm used to, but the book's beautiful.
I wanted to get Starfinder pretty bad, and then I played Pathfinder, and I was no longer excited about Starfinder anymore. So, because I did not like Pathfinder.
Pathfinder's definitely crunchier. But I like sci-fi settings. So
yeah, that's what drew me to it, is a good sci-fi settings. But
yep.
Then I touched some of the rules that it might have and realized it wasn't for me.
Yeah, that's fine. Not every game is for everybody. And you should take a look at Coriolis. I love Coriolis.
If you're looking for a sci-fi game that's generic but really rules light, I hear Tiny Frontiers is pretty slick.
Oh, man. Listen to this guy.
That's my one for tonight.
Number three.
Yes. So my number three is a nifty little box set, Paranoia.
Oh, yes.
I'm an old school Paranoia fan from the West End Games days. And this new exciting update is everything I love. It's rules light, it's minimalist, but it has all the biting satire and humor of Paranoia around some super cool new mechanics. And character creation is just this glorious experience of screwing over the person who sits to your left. And it's wonderful. Every minute of it is just like turning that knife.
Very cool. Yeah, I've got this on my drive-through RPG want list, and I have not picked it up yet.
The PDF is great. Get the box set. It's so worth it with the cards and everything. Oh yeah,
okay.
It's only like $35.
Oh, okay. I'll have to.
It's really well priced.
That's really good for a box set.
Yeah, I've always heard about Paranoia. So.
I cannot recommend this set enough.
For that price, I mean, that's a good price for like Doug said, for a box set. So I'm definitely going to look into that.
Yeah, I'll have to. To take it off my PDF want list and actually pick up a physical copy then.
The PDF is great. I mean, I went and bought the PDF the minute I got the book because I was like, oh, I'm going to want the PDF. But yeah, I cannot recommend that box set enough.
Nice. All right, Kent, number three for you, sir.
All right, number three is another PDF, and it's Monster Hearts 2 by Avery Alder. So Monster Hearts is kind of like Buffy the Vampire Slayer type role-playing where you and your friends are sexy monsters with a lot of teenage angst and personal horror. And I mean, you get into like secret love lives and triangles. And it's just I really like the setting of that. You know, I like playing, I've never watched Buffy in my life, but I've always been interested in like that. I know.
I am judging you so hard right now.
That's fine. I judge myself too every day. But it's so much to get into now. So, but yeah, and it's powered by the Apocalypse, which is a really cool system. So, yeah, I haven't actually played it yet, but I've read through the rules. The rules are really great. And I can't, you know, it's one I'm definitely going to feature on my show at some point in the future.
Nice. Yeah, that was that one, that book. And there was like a state. Now I feel bad that I don't remember what the vendor's name was, but they had a whole table of indie RPG books. And I had that one and the Warren earmarked, and I was going to come at the end of PAX Unplugged. I was going to go back and pick up a copy because I didn't want to carry. You don't want to carry around books around all day with you. And I went back, and they were all sold out.
This is when I bring a backpack to Gen Con. You carry that crap all day because it won't be there when you go back.
Yeah, I'm a rookie at this whole convention stuff. So what can I say? Yeah, that's definitely on my want to pick up list.
Our failures are how we learn.
So. That's right. That's right. All right. Now, Alan, time to get the judging.
I'm
out.
Ready. I'm ready to judge.
You get ready to judge because this is probably my most controversial top five pick so far. And, yeah, this is actually a collaboration pick with my daughter. My daughter made sure that this book was on my top five RPG list of 2017, and it is My Little Pony: Tales of Equestria.
That game is amazing.
By River Horse. This game actually is fun. I'm going to tell you right now.
It's so great.
My daughter loves it. If you've got kids, you need to pick up a copy of it. Especially if you've got daughters, if you've got young daughters, pick this book up and just have a blast with them. It is so easy to make a character, so easy to play. I did a session of this at Carnage for charity, for Gamers for a Cure, and all of my players had a blast. I had a couple young girls. I had a couple older girls. I had Jordan Streeter, who's been on the channel. He even played, and he was like, he walked away. He's like, man, that was so much more fun than I thought it was going to be. And I'm like, yeah, it's a fun game. And Sydney wanted, she's like, Dad, Tales of Equestria has to be on your top five list. I said, well, where should it be? And I was thinking, maybe we should put it in the top three. And she's like, you should put it number three. And I'm like, done. It's number three for us. So
there is no judgment here, man.
Nice.
I every episode of the show. Like, no
for
shame.
For real?
Oh, yeah.
Real? Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
No. I think you've talked about this game every time I've been on, so I think I'm gonna go have to buy it.
It's not a big book. I mean, you know, it's like I think it's under $30 if you buy it, you know, online or whatever. But it doesn't really have a whole lot of. It has a lot of like art from the show and stuff, but it is fun. It's just especially if you got kids. I know you got younger kids and you got boys, Kent. But I don't know. They might have fun with it. You know, just the same.
I'll play it with them, and then I'll make all my adult friends play it as well.
So. It's great. It's great. No shame. I think it's a great product, and I was kind of disappointed. I went to the Ninja Division booth and talked to John at PAX Unplugged, and I keep bringing up PAX Unplugged. I'm sorry, but I asked him. I said, "Where's your My Little Pony stuff?" You know, he's like, "No, we didn't bring it this year." I'm like, "Dude, I was ready to just open up my wallet and dump out my wallet for because Sydney was hoping to get more stuff, and they missed out. They said they're going to have it more in 2018, I guess. So definitely give it a look through Kent. There's not a PDF option for Tales of Equestria.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to go out and get it. So. I mean, nice. You've talked it up so much for me, so.
They have it at, like, Barnes & Noble and stuff. You can just go grab one.
Oh, is there?
That's where I got my copy. I just saw it at Barnes & Noble and grabbed it. I was like, oh, sweet.
Nice. Cool.
All right.
That's my number. That's my number three. All right, Alan, number two.
My number two is the Mittermark campaign setting for Torchbearer. Excuse me. I apologize. A little bit of a hiccup there. It is a campaign world based on Norse and Viking mythology written by Thor Olafsrud. You know, so Thor wrote this book. That means nice. It's legit. But it is a fantastic, harkens back to sort of the old school feel of early D&D with weather tables and things for like what trees grow where. Kind of got a Greyhawk feel. Love the Torchbearer rule set. I think it's fantastic. And so this is just a well-made book. They were on time. It was affordable. It was just beautiful.
Nice. That was a Kickstarter?
It was a Kickstarter, yep.
And do you have any idea how... I think I remember it being on Kickstarter, and I looked at it a few times, and I almost pledged for it, but the theme just kind of, I think there was a couple other projects that kind of caught my attention before that, and then the theme kind of, you know, I'm not a huge fantasy guy, so I think I passed on that one, but it did really, really well on Kickstarter, if I remember
correctly. It did, yeah. It was, yeah. And I went on the all-in pledge to get a second copy of the core rulebook and everything, so I had two now.
Nice.
So it's, Mittermark is fantastic. I highly recommend it.
Okay. Well, maybe I need to take a look at it a little bit more.
I do believe they have a PDF for that one. So
sweet. All right, Kent, number two for you, sir.
All right. Number two is probably the most well-known on my list. I have the book and I just got it 2 days ago and I've read through half of it.
You got it 2 days ago. Does it count?
Yeah. Cause
it was issued in 2017.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, if we were going by games I played in 2017, I'd be reaching way back. So, because that was most of what I played. But yeah, Tales from the Loop. So this is one I wanted when it hit Kickstarter. Just couldn't make it work at the time and just haven't been able to get it until recently. But it's, I mean, everybody probably knows about this one. It's role playing in the 80s. That never happened, which is a big thing right now. 80s theme stuff with the success of Stranger Things and everything. And it's just such a cool setting. The artwork is, I mean, just fantastic in the book. I know that's what caught a lot of people's eyes was the artwork.
Simon Stalling, right?
Yes.
Simon Stalling. He's a terrific artist. And we'll put this conversation on pause just for a second, if you don't mind, Kent.
Yeah.
Because I know Alan's smiling and he's laughing. So we're going to pick this up in a few minutes. How about that?
I thought we might.
Okay. All right. my number two is Alan's number one. So I'm going to let Alan talk about his number one. And you'll also know that it's my number two as well.
All right. Well, I'm glad we share it because it's a great game. Yeah, it is the new Star Trek Adventures role-playing game from Modiphius.
Oh, it's beautiful and it's great.
I am a exceptionally hardcore Trekkie. It's bad. Like, if you look right here, I have my collectible edition starship set up on my shelf right next to where I work.
Goodness.
No shame. All right. Star Trek for life.
It's all right. We all have our things.
And I've never found an RPG that played Star Trek the way it felt when I watched the show. I love sci-fi RPGs. I have a ton of them, and they all play differently, and that's great. But none of the, even the old Star Trek ones never screamed Star Trek at me when I played them. This one came out. I played it once, and it was like this revelation, man. Just boom. I'm like, this is Star Trek. These people, they understand Star Trek.
They do. And here's a cool thing. When I had Chris Birch on, I'm going to name drop a little bit, but I had Chris Birch on, a couple weeks ago to talk about John Carter. And we talked briefly about the Star Trek RPG. And that guy, he was like giving me like all this like little information about Star Trek that I didn't even know about. And it's just like, they do their homework on these things. So yeah, that's when you say that they know the property, they know the property.
Yeah, the production quality in the book is fantastic. Everything about it. It is the best RPG I played last year by far.
Nice. Yeah, that's the only one that I don't have a physical copy of. And that's going to be the next book that I pick up for an RPG because I just want it. And there's like a deluxe version, right? With like a different cover.
Yeah, there's a different cover deluxe version. I didn't get the Borg cube. I desperately wanted it.
Yeah,
I just couldn't justify it.
I can't justify it either. But that is going to get picked up within the next month for me because I've got the PDF and it's just beautiful. And I want a physical copy. I'm not a big Star Trek guy. I'm going to say that for the record. I am more Star Wars than anything. But I love this game. Don't give me a thumbs down, Al. I love this game. This is a great, great game. They've done a great job. It's definitely my number two. It's everything that I kind of wish Starfinder was a little bit more of.
So Starfinder's on my top 10 list at like, I think, place 8.
Oh, okay.
But man, Star Trek is just, it is the sci-fi RPG.
Exactly. Nice. All right. Kent, your number one.
All right. My number one is if you listen to my show, if you see me on social media, it should be pretty clear what my number one is because I talk about this game all the time. And I just ran it on my show the last two episodes. So we're talking about Bluebeard's Bride, my absolute favorite game to come out of 2017. I mean, the production value on this book is just out of this world. The game is so interesting. It's a heavy game. I opened my show with trigger warnings because it deals with very sensitive subject, but it doesn't do it for like a shock value. I think it's a really important game in how it tells its story and the things that it forces players to confront. It's based around the fairy tale of Bluebeard, but it's from the aspect of the bride. Bluebeard's bride is, well, the fairy tale Bluebeard is, he goes to town, gets this bride, and it has multiple endings where things go wrong. She can't trust him and stuff, but this is all from the point of view of the bride. So you're going through Bluebeard's house, which is haunted by all of his previous wives. And it is really a terrifying game. Like, you know, it's horror that's really effective in a role-playing game.
Now, the players play as like different psyche of you play different parts of the bride. Is that how it works?
Yeah, that's how it works. There's five different aspects of the bride and the players take on those aspects and they work together. They, you know, one's always in control and then that can shift between the other ones to deal with situations. But the way the game flows, the story it tells, just the production value of it. It was written by Whitney Beltran, Marissa Kelly and Sarah Richardson. It's just this game, just as the moment I read about it, it got its claws into me and just hasn't let go. So that's my easy number one, Bluebeard's Bride from Magpie Games.
Now, how available is that book? Is it fairly?
Yeah, it's available now. There is supplements coming out. The Kickstarter, the people that did the Kickstarter getting their supplements first, and then they're releasing supplements for everyone else in the future, which is like a whole book of rooms, a whole book of tokens, just inspiration you can use for running your game.
Nice. Yep. Alan, what are your thoughts on Bluebeard's Bride?
I haven't played it, but I love the folks at Magpie Games, and so I am sure it's excellent.
Nice.
Everything they've made is top notch.
Yeah, they've got some really good titles. I've looked at their. They had a booth at PAX as well, and I walked by them quite a bit.
They're great people, and they make amazing games. So I can't imagine it's anything less than a top notch game.
Nice. All right, so we're gonna go back to Kent's number two, my number one, Tales from the Loop. I love this game. I think it's great. There is a reason why it swept the Ennies. There is a reason why it resonates with so many people. When I had Thomas on from Free League, he even said that the success of this book and the timing of everything just is they just hit it at the right time, and they didn't have any idea that it was just going to be this big hit for them. They had no idea about Stranger Things coming out, so they just had Simon Stollenhag's art, and he wanted to make an RPG, and it all just kind of comboed together and became this runaway hit for them, which is great. And I love this game. I think it's great. I think the rules are light. I like how you can play in this kind of weird, you know, alternate 80s, because, I mean, we've seen so many 80s movies growing up, kids getting into mischief and, you know, weird things happening. You haven't, Alan? You don't watch?
Dude, I was born in, like, the last year of the 80s.
Oh, man. So you never watched any old 80s movies?
I think I've seen Pretty in Pink and St. Elmo's Fire.
Oh, my word.
So you never seen, like, Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
You never watched, like, Gremlins or Stand By Me or Goonies?
No.
You've never watched any
Gremlins, right? That's the one where you pour the water on the thing, and after midnight, you don't beat it.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, boy.
Yikes. That's it. That's it for Alan tonight, folks. Say goodnight to Alan. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
That's ageism.
See, this is kind of where it comes in. Like, I think that's why it hits hard with me, because it's like, you know, it's partly reliving my childhood, and I love it. And I think, and they've got a new supplement book that just came out. It's called Our Friends the Machines. And I've got a copy on the way. And as soon as it comes in, I've already read it. I want to do a review for it, because there's one setting that just hits home for me, and I can't, like, it deals with Transformers, folks. I mean, come on. Transformer toy line being launched. I love it. Oh my gosh. I can't say it enough. Tales from the Loop, my number one. It should be a whole bunch of other people's number ones too, except for Alan, because Alan didn't grow up in the 80s and he has no idea.
I am dead on the inside. I am sorry.
It's all right. So Kent, do you think you'll have Tales from the Loop at some point on your podcast?
Yeah, definitely so.
Nice.
Yeah, I can't wait to get it to the table and play it. So
very cool. Alan, you actually had a top 10 list on your website.
I do.
AlanBarr.net. What were your, like, your eight, yeah, and your, you know, if you want to give us your top five, your
I can tell you real quick.
10 through 6. Real quick, we'll get those.
Yeah. So every year I do a top 10. So my number 10 was Savage Rifts from Savage Worlds. Kickstarted in 2016, delivered in 2017. It is gonzo post-apocalyptic science fantasy, powered by Savage Worlds. It's a fantastic game. I recommend, if you like Rifts, but the rule set's a little too crunchy for you, Savage Rifts is a great place to land. Yep. Number 9, Starfinder.
Okay.
We talked about that. Yep. Number 8, the 20th anniversary edition of Changeling the Dreaming.
Oh, I saw that. That's
from Onyx Path and White Wolf.
Yeah.
It is a massive, I should show you this book. Hang on. It's got the stained glass looking cover.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, that's nice.
To illustrate, this is my Star Trek book. It is a slim 350 pages. This is my Changeling 20th anniversary edition book.
Wow.
Weighing in at, I want to say 6 something. Well, a little under 500. It is a massive tome, chock full of 20 years of Changeling lore.
And awesome.
Their
game,
with their living meta plot, is fantastic. And then number 7, Tomb of Annihilation from Wizards of the Coast.
Yep.
A fantastic adaptation of the Tomb of Horrors to the new edition. Number 6 is Xanthar's Guide to Everything, another D&D product.
Yeah, that was a huge hit for them. They said that was like their best-selling book of all time, or didn't they say it was like...
Yeah, they're
just knocking it out of the park.
The 5th edition is just fantastic. I'm an old-school D&D fan, and I love the new edition, so...
Nice. Ken, do you have anything that just missed your top 5?
I don't think so. Nothing I can remember off the top of my head, just... I came in under the wire getting this one put together just due to outside factors. So,
yes, no, that's fine. The one game that I will give Fat Goblin Games a little bit of a nod. They also put out a game that's kind of in the same of Supernatural 80s. It's called Versus Stranger Stuff. They actually put a season 2 book out in 2017. And if you like the Tales from the Loop, that genre of game, I'm going to tell you to pick that up. And it uses a playing card system instead of dice, which is different. And it's relatively inexpensive. So if you're looking for that type of genre of RPG, why don't you give Fat Goblin Games a look at on DriveThruRPG and maybe pick up a physical copy or even just the PDF is really cool. That one kind of just barely missed my top five because they're doing some cool stuff.
They make good stuff. Fat Goblin Games is good people.
They are good people.
Yep, that would fall into my top 10, you know, if I gave proper consideration because I've read through that one. I have the PDF and I really like that system. I like the card use of it and the setting. So
yep. Use that Versus M engine that that's pretty neat.
So. Yep.
All right, folks, that is our top five RPGs of 2017. Check out Roll to Play podcast. I'll put a link to Kent's podcast down in the description. Also, check out Gallant Knight Games and AlanBarr.net for Alan there. And I think that's going to do it for us, folks. I'm Doug. This has been Victory Condition to Gaming because winning shouldn't be the only victory condition when you get to the table.